Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses and training videos, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/know-how. That's LYNDA.com/know-how.
Today, we're shaking things up. Father Robert is here. He's going to explain VLANs today. You're going to know that and a whole lot more. Welcome to Know How. This is Twit's how-to show, and we're shaking things up. I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
I'm Father Robert Ballasser.
And things are great now. We've got a new member of the Know How family. Father Robert's joining us permanently
as our
co-host.
Well, they figured that I was in the studio enough, I might as well do another show.
Yeah, you were standing there when I showed up. Weird. I was like, what are you doing here?
Let's do a show.
It's like he's got a lower third. Well, Adam.
We had the assets. We might as well use them. Well,
welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Look forward to working with you. This is going to be fun. So let's see, the fourth member now. We've got Brian Burnett back there, our TD.
That's your cue.
We got Shannon Morris, our producer.
Hi.
We've got Greg Burnett, our camera nothing.
Guy. He helps.
I just wanted to point him out and just kind of confuse him at that point. So we're going to be shaking up the format of the show a bit. We're going to be adding things. We're going to do more than one project. One of the bigger things we've noticed, lots of emails, people are like, can you cover this? Can you cover that? Can we do this and that? We're like, we only do one topic an episode.
People, there are only so many weeks in the year, so we had to make a change.
So we cram more stuff into each episode. That's what's going to happen starting today. And the first thing we're going to do, we're actually going to take a look at what's making news. Now, we're going to be taking a look from week to week or time to time. We're going to be looking at news that speaks to our maker spirit, our DIY spirit. And I found something on Hackaday, which I thought was pretty cool. Did you take a look at this?
I did. This is actually pretty cool. This is right up my alley. I love it when someone takes tech that many consider obsolete and gives it new life. And this definitely fits in that category.
So what this guy did, Thomas Janko, took an old Casio PDA. It was just sitting around collecting dust. And what he did was he made it his touchscreen display that will show the weather, the time, and the current status of his garage door. What he did was he took an SDK that was sitting around on Casio's website, then he connected this device using the serial cable because this is really, really old. And he decided to make this a display. I love this idea, probably because I have a bunch of PDAs sitting around in my garage. Seems a little crazy.
It's crazy, but you know what? This really does encapsulate the maker spirit, because when you look at a lot of the projects going out there, there are things you can buy to do what you're trying to make. But why buy it if you could turn something that you already have into this really cool little I did this project? I like this. You know, yeah. Is it really, really feasible that most of us are going to go out there and turn all of our old PDAs into remotes and display screens?
It's feasible.
It's feasible. But I mean, is it probable? Probably not.
Not practical. All that
problem. Not practical. Yeah. Right. So the fact that someone actually took the time to take some SDKs, to take some old hardware and to give it new life, I got to give that geek cred.
Yeah, I probably also have a soft spot for Casio PDAs, PDAs in general. Like I mentioned, had a whole bunch in my garage. I used to have my Sony Clio that was a gift to my dad. He'd never used the dang thing, Dad. And so I ended up with it. And it was my alarm clock. So here's the thing. I had this alarm clock that was sitting around, take out the garbage and then do this. Because what else are you going to do with it? You got to do something with an old Palm PDA because it's running Palm OS. And we'll take a look at different news from week to week. That's a little bit of that. But first up, now that you're here, Padre, you're taking on VLANs, which is great because I need to learn about this stuff.
Yeah, so VLANs, it's one of these topics that typically stays in the enterprise, but we're seeing it more and more in consumer-level hardware. So we thought that we should show our good people out there how they could probably unleash the power of gear they already have. Now, Ayaz, you know what this is, right? Because I know you've played with this on Know How before.
It's a router.
Yeah. All but right. Specifically, this is one of these WRT-54Gs.
Yeah.
We love them because they were one of the first products that you could drop DDWRT onto. Mm-hmm. That's that open-source routing software. In fact, right now, you know, they're going to switch over and they're going to show you this is the login screen. You probably see this in your machine. Now, when you load this up, you're going to see that there are a lot of features that you don't normally use. I mean, everything from controlling the power of the wireless to different security options, setting up VPN. But there is an option here that you probably have skipped over, and that's this. VLANs. That's right. If you've loaded up DDWRT onto your router, you probably have this option to set different VLANs on the different ports. So this is the WAN port, port 1, port 2, port 3, port 4. Most people don't know what that means, and so most people leave it at VLAN 0 for the LAN and VLAN 1 for the WAN.
And if you don't have a router that's running DDWRT, we do have an episode, actually two episodes, on DDWRT and where you can find out if your router can run it. Buffalo routers, some of them actually run DDWRT right out of the gate, which is awesome. Very powerful software. It makes your router do things. If you want like a $50 router, it makes it act like a $300 router. Because the only thing different about these devices isn't the hardware. It's the firmware. And that's what DDWRT is fantastic with. And you're going to tell us more about this. VLAN is virtual local area network.
Right. So LAN is a local area network. A VLAN is a virtual local area network. The idea is when we think about our network, we think of like it's got a cable, right? So all our traffic runs through this cable. Well, with a VLAN, I can actually take this one cable and basically subdivide it. I could turn it into multiple networks, all looking as if they're their own network, but still running over the same cable. Now, that's the most simple version of what a VLAN can do. But before we actually talk about VLANs, we probably need to talk a little bit about how switches work.
Okay.
Because you need to know how a switch works before you can actually activate a VLAN. Otherwise, you're just going to be guessing at what the parameters do, and that's never a good thing. So the idea behind a switch, any switch really, is it allows traffic to flow from one device to another, from one port to another. And actually, we have a quick graphic here that shows you what a typical switch looks like. You've got switch one and switch two. They've all got their ports. So I've got five port switches. Four ports are free on each switch. One port's used for the uplink. And then I connect the two. So now these two switches are connected. Now we're going to send a broadcast packet over this flat layer switch. So it has no VLANs. This is just how you would buy it from the store. A packet arrives on port one, it's broadcast, which means it doesn't yet know where it's going. It's now going to flow through all the other ports on the switch. It's going to hit the uplink. It's going to go to the other switch, flow through all those ports. And so essentially you get one packet in and seven packets out. It's a really, really cool way to look at what's going on inside your switch. When you think about the type of activity that's happening, this is actually what's going on every time you plug your computer, your laptop, into
is
a switch.
Is this what those flashing lights are on my freaking router and my switches?
That, yeah, exactly.
That's what this is?
That flashing.
That looks familiar.
Those are packets running through the switch. Uh-huh. Yeah. So that's what we've got, and that's how that works. Now, what a VLAN is going to do is it's actually going to play with what we call the OSI model. Now, we need a new bumper here, Shannon. There's got to be nerd alert. This is heavy, heavy nerd alert stuff.
The entire show is nerd alert.
Yeah, actually,
we start the show.
Nerd alert. Nerd alert. So Brian's going to show you the OSI model. Now, the OSI model, it's for network people. This describes everything about how networks work. We start off with layer one, that's the physical layer. That's the actual cable. Then we go to layer two, which is the data link layer. Layer three, which is the network layer. Layer four, which is the transport layer. Layer five, the session layer. Layer six, the presentation level layer. And layer seven, the application layer. Most of us live at layer seven. That's where we do all our stuff. But VLANs operate at the data link layer, the layer two. So that tells you it's really, really low. It's very far down there, just above the physical connection. And that's actually where it gets most of its usefulness. A VLAN is actually 802.1Q. They operate at layer two. When we say a VLAN packet, what we're really saying is a packet inside of an Ethernet frame that has been tagged. It's been encapsulated. And it will flow from one switch to the other. So have I completely lost the audience yet, Ayaz?
It does. Even if you did, don't worry about it. Because we will make this available as a podcast, because we do that here at Twitch.
That's right.
Twitch.tv/KH. Show notes. We'll have lots of things. So in case you are like, what was that? You'll be able to download this thing in HD, pause it, and go, oh, layer, 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 layer. So don't worry.
Bam.
Yeah, you haven't lost anybody yet.
Good. Okay, now we're going to take a look at this hardware, which is all VLAN enabled. What we're going to do is we're going to set it up so that you have rather than all of the ports being on VLAN 0, we're going to set them for specific VLANs. We're going to give them numbers so they're ID'd properly. And when we do that, it looks more like this. Again, Brian's going to show you my computer. Once we've got it set up, these switches have now been tagged with VLAN. So VLAN 11, 12, 13, 14, 11, 12, 13, 14. Same scenario. We get a broadcast packet. It comes into that port 1. It now has the tag for VLAN 11 added to it. So that Ethernet frame now says VLAN 11. It's now going to go through the uplink, which means it's going to go through the other switch. But now, instead of being broadcasted to all the other ports, it's only going to go to the other port that's tagged with VLAN 11. And this is the same for everything. You tag it with VLAN 13, it only goes to ports tagged with VLAN 13. 14 to 14, 15 to 15, 1 to 1, 2 to 2, et cetera, et cetera. Now, it's just like traffic organization right now, right? We're just making sure that, for example, if we look here, any traffic that goes into port 1 will come out of port 1 over here. Port 2 comes out of port 2. We actually talked to Jeff Enters, who is an engineer over at HP. He gave us a more thorough demonstration of exactly how VLANs work.
We've got a really good demonstration, a really simple demonstration of how this works. Now, explain to me, what do we have on the table? We have these IntelliJax, which, by the way, I have to add, these are some of my favorite pieces of gear to come out of Interop. These are essentially power over Ethernet powered managed switches. But why do we have four of them on the table? What are they doing?
So we just kind of set up a real simple configuration here to help show people what VLANs are about, show you guys what this is all about. And so pretend this is a regular switch that's in your environment, 24-port switch, 48-port switch, whatever it might be. Pretend this is another one. And then these two over here, we just use them as end stations. Pretend those are laptops or what have you. We just use those as a device that we can ping to verify that connectivity. So again, very simple configuration of two switches and two end devices, and we've essentially got two VLANs going across here, a VLAN 11 and a VLAN 12, and we're going to show you how these VLANs keep that separated. So the originating laptop over there can see one VLAN but can't see the other VLAN.
Right. And that's what you're seeing right now on this feed, and that is it's got two windows. One is trying to ping this device, one's trying to ping this device, and as you can see, traffic is only getting through on one of these command shells. And the reason for that is that we have set these up so that port 1 and port 2 have the same, on this switch, have the same VLANs as port 1 and port 2 on that switch, which essentially means that with this one cable, I've created two isolated networks. The traffic doesn't flow between them.
That's absolutely correct. Yep. So to further that just a little bit, this port number 1 here is VLAN 11. This port number 1 here is VLAN 11. Number 2 here is VLAN 12. Number 2 here is VLAN 12. But on the back, This purple cable goes straight from here into the back of this switch, and that cable has both VLANs, and that's VLAN tagged with 802.1Q, and 802.1Q is the technology or the standard used to tag the VLANs.
Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and switch this cable over to port 2, and in a second, because it's got to dump the ARP cache,
correct,
in a second I should start to see pings off of that second IntelliJax. But tell me, how does the tagging work? Where do the tags start, where do they end, and how do they run through my network?
Sure. So the most of your end workstations and servers typically aren't going to send out a tag on a packet. They have the capability these days, but typically they're not. And so the packet's going to come into, let's say in this situation, port 2, it's going to be untagged. So the switch is going to receive that packet with no tag on it. It's going to look at it and say, well, that port's only in VLAN 12. So immediately, any packet coming into a switch, and even a blank switch that has no configuration on it, essentially what they do is they tag the packet as it traverses the switch, so the switch can keep an eye on where that packet is supposed to live. So again, it comes in, immediately the switch tags the packet with VLAN 12, and then again, it sends it out the back here with that 802.1Q tag on it with VLAN 12 in that 802.1Q tag.
Now, we can see on the screen that we've flopped. So now I can access the other IntelliJax, but that first IntelliJax is no longer pingable. If that's all it was, that wouldn't be that impressive. I can actually start grouping together VLANs. I can actually start grouping together ports into particular network zones. Show me how I do that on this interface and tell me why I'd want to do that.
Sure. So in our example here, as you look at the screen, you can see that on port 1, and again, we're looking at switch number 2 here, and port number 1 on that has a what's called a PVID of 11, and port number 2 has a PVID of 12. And what the PVID is it says, if I receive a packet and I don't know what VLAN should I put that on? And so the PBID says, well, if you receive a packet doesn't have a VLAN tag on it, put it on this VLAN. And in this situation, we're putting it on 11 or we're putting it on 12 for port 2. So that's what we're doing. Let me go ahead and do the demo.
Go ahead and do the honors.
All right, so here we go. So now what we're going to do is we're going to be able to make that laptop be able to ping both of these end devices. And the way we're going to do that is we're going to switch port 2 here to 11, to VLAN 11. All right, so here we go. We're going to hit that. That's going to apply it. And now
we need to switch this back over to port 1 because that's where we've added the VLAN.
Exactly.
So in a couple of seconds, again, after it's dumped out its ARP cache, it should show us that it can now ping both the devices.
That is correct.
And there we go. Now we've got both feeds, so that one port is now able to see the traffic on both of these switches, on both of these ports. Now, this is a very small demonstration, but hopefully it shows you the power of a VLAN, and it hopefully inspires you to go out and play. Because, again, the best place for you to find out more about VLANs is to get some gear that speaks VLANs and just start playing with it. Start assigning VLANs, you know, make a few mistakes, reset the gear, find out how to use them, and find out how they can benefit you in your network endeavor.
Okay. So, again, we were really just using it to go port to port, so from this port to this port. And that was to show you that you could essentially take one cable and turn it into multiple networks. Mm-hmm. But it goes beyond that. I mean, imagine all the different types of networks that you might want in your office network or your home network. You want one network for the wireless because they should access certain things. You mm-hmm. want one network for, say, TVs because you don't want anything else to be on that so that you get really good flow of traffic. You want one network for guests, one network for production, one network for Wi-Fi, whatever it's going to be, connected cameras. If you use multiple VLANs, you can now have all those different networks and the traffic doesn't intermingle. That's really what it's for. Now, here's the thing, though. Some people think that you use VLANs for security, right? Because, if it's in
that computer can't see that computer, so that's got to be good, right?
Right. No. A VLAN is not for security because the traffic's not encrypted. Anyone who's trying to find all the different VLANs on a network can find all the different VLANs on the network. So don't use it that way. I mean, I know some people are going to be tempted to, but don't. Please don't. If you're watching this right now, don't do it. It's going to be a bad thing. The other thing to know about VLANs is, yes, there is a lot of hardware that talks VLANs. If you look down here, this DDWRT speaks VLAN. This Sonic Wall, Firewall speaks VLAN. This Enterprise Class Enterasys switch speaks VLAN. And like cameras, the cameras from Dropcam will actually talk VLAN. But you need everything in the network. If it doesn't speak VLAN to at least pass VLAN through. A really good example is this. This is a Netgear 8-port PoE switch. It's not managed, so I can't assign different ports, different VLANs, but it will at least pass through those VLAN tags. Unlike this, this is a cheapy D-Link that I bought for like $5 at a flea market.
It fell off a truck.
Actually, I think I stole this one.
Okay.
You've
procured this device. What about this VLAN?
It doesn't speak VLAN.
Right.
So what happens is if a VLAN packet comes in, mm-hmm. it will come out the other side and it will be stripped of its VLAN.
Okay, so that's no good.
Yeah, so it will mess you up. If you want to play with VLANs, just make sure, keep the instructions for your gear, make sure that they're at least VLAN compatible, that they'll pass the traffic through so that the devices that actually do speak VLAN can receive the proper frame.
Well, couldn't you just use DDWRT, take a bunch of routers and turn them into switches to do all this stuff if you wanted to? So you don't have to necessarily worry about, does this switch does this? Does this switch take care of this? Is my firewall? You can have a bunch of these routers chained together if you bother to change their settings on that.
Exactly, yeah. If you had a bunch of these, and, you know, these are not expensive devices, right, you can set up your own VLAN test environment. And then you get to figure out how you're going to use it. In the enterprise level, we typically use VLANs to separate one part of the network from another so that if there's a problem in one side of the network, it doesn't affect everything. Now, you probably don't need to do that at home, but it is kind of cool to be able to think, hey, you know what? I'm always worried that the traffic from my drop cam is destroying my ability to watch smooth streams on my TV. Well, guess what? Give your TV one VLAN, give your drop cams another VLAN, and the traffic stays separate.
Well, now I'm just realizing the news of that Belkin bought Linksys. I've had very little success with Belkin routers in general. Hopefully they don't mess that up too much.
Yeah. This is the problem. They want to keep those separate. VLANs, the network vendors, think VLANs really only belong in the enterprise.
Yeah. And they charge you more. That's the point.
Yeah, they want to charge you that $300,000 to get a proper switch that will speak VLANs properly. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, with the old Linksys days, they're like, oh, we don't care. We're all using the same hardware. So if you want to put on your own firmware, go ahead.
Okay, so we've got all of these virtual. So that could actually clean up my home theater setup right now. I've got lots and lots of different things going. I got my PS3, I got my Roku box, I got my Apple TV. I've got all this stuff going on. Then I've got these crazy IP cameras I set up with my Android phones. I could put them separately. That way, I don't have to worry about them interfering with each other when it comes to that nice, smooth streaming video. I like this idea.
Yeah. It's a way to make your network bigger than it actually is.
Nifty. Shall we move on to our know-it-all segment or? What is this segment going to be called? We're still working the name out. What is this thing called?
After you buy.
Yes. Brand new format, people.
Brand new format.
So we're going to take this thing you bought and smash this thing you bought, right?
Yeah. So this monstrous looking thing is actually a NAS box. Now, Ayaz, you know the 3-2-1 of backup, right?
Which is?
The three different copies on two different types of media.
I've got the I hope it doesn't break method, or I put it in the cloud.
I think most of us do that, right. Well, that works most of the time, especially the cloud. If you have a cloud service, something like Carbonite, then, yeah, you do have a copy that's saved. But what happens if you're talking about terabytes worth of data? Mm-hmm. Not so easy to put up in the cloud, and not so easy to move it from place to place. So instead, I thought we might take a look at this really cool box. This is a NAS box that holds 3 terabytes of data, actually 2 3-terabyte drives.
Okay.
And it's disaster-proof. Let's take a look.
The N2 is a 2-bay network-attached storage box from IOSafe that is billed as disaster-proof. In reality, the N2 is 2 products in 1, a high-performance Soho NAS inside a 28-pound disaster-resistant suit of armor. We've seen IOSafe's ruggedized products stand up to the most horrific tests, surviving commonplace dunkings, fires, tractors, impacts, gunshots, and lightning. The N2 uses all of IOSafe's know-how to give users the convenience of network-attached storage in the IT equivalent of an Abrams tank. The armor starts with a steel shell that is capped by a steel and ceramic door held in place by 2 hex bolts. The door fits snugly into the inner sheath, which is actually water-impregnated ceramic. IOSafe created this material, and it's been used in all the rugged desktop products. In a fire, the ceramic ablates, keeping the heat from reaching the core, while the water evaporates, both cooling the ceramic and creating a positive pressure inside the case, keeping smoke out. Inside the door is another steel cap, which is actually the start of the NAS capsule. Removing the cap reveals 2 drive bays with secured SATA sleds. The N2 currently supports up to 4 terabyte SATA drives, and our unit came with 2 1-terabyte 7200 RPM Seagate drives, but we replaced them with 2 cooler-running 3-terabyte Western Digital Red drives. The NAS inside the N2 is produced by IOSafe's partner, Synology, known for solid performance and a plethora of features. The bottom of the front face houses the regular array of LED indicators, as well as the power and backup buttons, a USB port, and an SD card reader. The back of the N2 sports 2 USB 3.0 ports and a single gigabit Ethernet port. Users of Synology products will feel right at home with the N2. The setup wizard will have your new drives up and running in about 10 minutes, and then you can play with the exhaustive list of N2 features. Windows, Mac, NFS file sharing protocols, of course. FTP, FTPS, SFTP, TFTP, Pixie, why not? WebDAV, you betcha. VPN services, media indexing, network backup, VLAN support, all part of the package. The N2 makes it easy to create shares, add users, join existing domains, and pretty much everything you might want out of a Soho NAS. The N2 can also host your website and MySQL database, make itself available to the outside world via DDNS, auto-configure your router, set firewall and quality of service rules, enable SNMP monitoring integration, give you a terminal shell, and set all your standard networking parameters. Performance tests show transfer rates of about 53 megabits per second write and 83 megabits per second read, which put it into the upper echelon of Soho NAS boxes. Overall, our initial review of the N2 is quite positive. It has a slick, responsive interface that the newbie can have up and running within minutes, but all the advanced features that would be demanded of an enterprise-level product. Combined with IOSafe's legendary disaster-proof technology, the N2 is a serious contender for your network-attached cache.
I think people are going to want this so that the copy they have at home stays on a device that is easily accessible, that is fast, and is disaster-proof. And I think you pointed out I accidentally said megabits per second.
Yeah, I saw in the video it said megabytes per second.
Yeah, no, this is megabytes.
Much faster.
This is crazy yeah. fast. Way faster than I thought it was actually going to be. Now, something else that I should mention about this thing is $600.
$600.
That's without the drives.
So without the drives.
It's pricey.
It's really magnetic. Magnetic, apparently.
But what you're paying them, it's got magnetic tools. Gotta love
magnetic
that.
Tools attached
little
to that.
Little touches. What you're paying for really isn't this. This is a cool device. I mean, I love destroying these, but you're paying for this. This is IOSafe's drive recovery or data recovery service. The idea is if you lose data for any reason, it doesn't have to be because of a disaster. It could be because you did something stupid. You accidentally deleted your wedding pictures. They will, for a year or multiple years if you buy more policy years, mm-hmm. they will get it back. They will send the device out to their experts, and they will get it back for you. So you're really buying an insurance policy. That's what you're paying for. And I figure the NAS just comes along as an extra added bonus.
This thing was $600?
$600.
How much is the service fee is after that?
I can't remember the add-up. It's not that much more. I mean, it's something like $100 or $200 for additional 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
That's peace of mind, though. And the other thing one of the big reasons why you want to keep things off-site in general is if something happens to your house. This thing is pretty much disaster-proof. So if anything does happen, you still get your stuff back and you have that service.
Exactly, yeah. So when people keep things off-site, like you, most people are thinking they're keeping it in the cloud. Problem is that's slow. That's really slow. I mean, yeah, if it's a document, a picture, yes. But if you're doing video work and you've got a 6 gigabyte project, that's not going to move up and down so quickly. And you're going to have to copy the whole thing down before you can actually start working on it. This keeps it accessible. I can actually do video editing work straight off this NAS. I can keep it in a closet downstairs. And if there's a fire, who cares? Because the device is going to survive.
Well, I think you should care if there's a fire.
Oh, okay.
Maybe
yeah.
I might be a little bit worrywart. I know if there's a fire,
I do care about a fire, right. But I'm not going to care. I'm not going to worry about my data. Now here's the thing. We want to do something different on KnowHow, right? I mean, we talked about switching this up. A review is cool, but we thought, hey, what if we could hold on to a product for an extended period of time? Not just give you our initial impression, but say, hey, 3 months, 4 months, 6 months later, are we still using it? Is it still working? Is it still worth it? So this is going to be the first of a new breed of segments for KnowHow.
After you buy, I've got my own stuff that I purchased for myself that I want to review and let you know how it's been going, because those initial impressions are great.
Always.
Things work really well for the first couple of weeks. It's that when you've been living with something and you've been tinkering with it and you've been changing things, that's when stuff starts to become less pretty.
Right.
You want to find out what happens there. So I've got a bunch of stuff of my own that I want to show you guys in the long run. So we'll have that in this new format. Pretty freaking awesome.
I'm going to make this my primary data device. I'm going to store all of my video editing on this for the next 6 months. And who knows? If we're lucky, maybe my house will burn to the ground and we can actually test to see if it's disaster-proof.
I don't know if you know what the word lucky means. Let's hope that this thing will be okay and so will you.
But that is after you buy. Now, did you know that the more you know, the more you can succeed? That's why we're really happy to welcome onto KnowHow our very first sponsor, Lynda. Now, Lynda.com is an online learning company that helps anyone learn creative software and business skills to achieve their personal and professional goals. With a Lynda.com subscription, members receive unlimited access to a vast library of high-quality, current, and engaging video tutorials across a wide variety of subjects. Now, we've got software. We've got Excel, we've got Photoshop, we've got Dreamweaver, WordPress, QuickBooks, PowerPoint. They teach business skills, everything from resume creation, time management, negotiation. They can teach you about the hobbies that you're hoping to pick up: photography, videography, audio recording, songwriting, even programming. That's right. You can learn web development, app development, CSS, SQL, and database. Basically, everything that the Twit Army might want to know about, Lynda can teach them. Now, how is Lynda.com different from other free or open source video tutorials? Because there are a lot of them out there. If you go to YouTube, if you Google for a training course, you're going to find them. But Lynda is different because they offer 2,000 courses with new courses added daily. This week, they've added courses that include 3D printing, SEO, and social media marketing, WordPress Essentials, and DSLR video. That's right. If you're a budding videographer and you want to take your SLR out there and shoot something like Freddie Wong or Corridor Digital, Linda will show you how. Their instructors are working professionals at the top of their fields, and they're expert teachers. High-quality video production from state-of-the-art studios, which means that these aren't homemade videos that you'll find where some guy is fumbling with a mic or giving you some really boring explanation that should be done in montage. Linda knows how to do it right because they've got curated course content. Each Linda course is carefully structured so that the users can learn from start to finish or jump to a specific chapter for quick answers. Their searchable transcripts allow you to search inside a video. That's right, you can actually search for something within a video, not just the start or the end, to save time and find exactly what you're looking for. Their bookmarks playlists allow you to organize your courses into a customized learning path, and they've got courses for all levels, covering a wide range of technical skills, creative techniques, business strategies, and more. You can also watch from your computer, tablet, or mobile device. You can switch back and forth between your devices, and you get to pick up where you left off. You get to start watching it on your desktop, then walk away and watch the rest of it on your phone. It's really that simple. With Linda, you get to set the pace. And with their mobile access, you can learn what you want, when you need it. Now, here's what we want you to do. Our know-how crew, we know that you're always into the learning. So we want you to try lynda.com. It's only $25 a month for access to Linda's entire course library. Or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructor's project using the exact same assets. And you can try lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. That's right. That's because we love you. We're going to give you a 7-day trial. Visit lynda.com/knowhow. That's lynda.com/knowhow to access the entire library. That's over 2,000 courses free for 7 days. That's lynda.com/knowhow. And we thank Linda for their support of KnowHow.
You know, I've been using lynda.com to take a look at Premiere. I learned Final Cut way back in the old days, back when I was a video editor. And Final Cut's great and everything, but Apple decided to change everything, and that locked me into the Apple universe, right? You're stuck in that Apple universe. Premiere is available for Mac and PCs. I won't have to get locked down to Mac Pros. And their tutorials are fantastic. I was watching one on my actual machine. I was watching it on my desktop, on my laptop here. And then I moved to my iPad to look at it because they have an iPad app. Really good stuff. Really easy to follow along. And it's just high quality. And it's way cheaper than going to courses. $25, if I want to switch things, I can do that. Really cool.
Yeah. I mean, in an age where knowledge is currency, I mean, you're really buying a gold mine. I like that.
Well, talking about back my video editing days, you know, there's something I wanted to do. We're going to brainstorm something right now. I wanted to build a portable podcasting rig. So what we're going to do is we're going to chat about exactly how this is going to work. But I'll explain why I wanted to do this in the first place. A long time ago, back in, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, I used to be a reporter. I was a blogger. I was an editor of a blog called Gadgetel.com. And what I would do is I would go down to New York City, because I was in upstate New York, and I would go to all of these different shows, like Showstoppers and all those kinds of things. And I was basically a one-man crew. I'd have to go down there, take photos, get videos, and try to get them on the website as soon as humanly possible. Now, this is years ago. This is like edge speeds, 3G, predates iPhone kind of days. So didn't exactly have the same kind of tools. But what I wanted to do was I wanted to make some really great content for this site. So what I want to make out of this rig is I want to get high-quality video, high-quality audio. I want to be able to edit and upload on the same machine, and it's got to be portable.
Oh, that's a tall order. I mean, there are gadgets to do all those different things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can find a camera that broadcasts directly, so if you want to do a live stream. I've got decent cameras that can record high-quality video. I've got field mics that get high-quality audio. But, you know, if you want it all in a gadget that does everything and is portable, I don't think that actually exists yet.
It doesn't exist entirely yet. That's why we're going to keep messing with it. So I had some ideas what we can use. I know that I've seen Alex Lindsay with this every now and then at Pixelcore. He has an Owly for his iPhone. This is a device that you can use that lets you have a stable image. That's one of the bigger things I want. I want to make sure that I don't have that jello effect that people have. Or if you ever watch some of these, if you go to these other websites and they're trying to show you something, they're just kind of doing this, right? And there's all kinds of shake, and it's really annoying. So what I want is something to give me some kind of stabilization. I'm trying to find products for that. I want to make sure the thing I have has an LTE connection. Because if I'm uploading video, it better be freaking fast. Because that stuff's going to go bad fast. This is news we're talking about. Let's get it out as soon as possible. And the audio. If I'm using this guy, let's say I'm using my iPad because I'm the guy with the iPad with the LTE. The audio here is really good. Mm-hmm. But if I'm talking to Robert, his audio doesn't come as great. And if I'm at a show, gosh,
you pick up everything. Yeah,
it's the loud. Auditorium. The microphone on that is not exactly like a shotgun mic where it's pointed at him. It's all the noise. Any ideas about that?
Well, you know, there are a couple of different ways that I've done it in the past. You, of course, can use a wireless mic rig. You can get two high-quality, like Sennheiser or Electrosound microphones that use XLR connectors so you mm-hmm. can balance input into your device. Make sure that the mic is actually on the person that you're trying to interview. That works well, but it, you know, every time you do something like that, it's going to add both to the complexity, the bulk, and the weight of your portable rig. So, I don't think that's maybe the best use for your rig.
The key for this whole thing is speed. Right? We want to get the stuff as fast as possible. We want it to be light. I've got some Bluetooth ideas. I've got some other ideas. I think there are some other wireless solutions because a lot of these devices have mic ins. And we can make use of that. So this is just phase one. This is the planning, the brainstorming phase. I've got a whole bunch of ideas. In a couple of weeks, we're going to actually show you what we put together because I'm going to make one of these things. And I guarantee you this. As we mentioned before, we're going to be doing revisions of these things.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to try, and it's going to get better and better. The first one might be a little clunky. I mean, we had talked about using something like this is a Surface RT.
This is an RT. Yeah.
Now, because back when I was a reporter, we didn't have tablets like this that actually run. Well, this is an RT, though. If you were going to get like a Pro, at least you'd have full Windows. You have a real editor on there. You'd have a lot of different things. But I don't believe they come with radios. You can't do 3G radio or 4G unless you get some other device.
See, that's actually one of the things that I was wondering about. I know you're really big into having an integrated external connection. You want LTE. You want something fast. But I'd also like to see the rig include a backup source because we both know that when you go into one of these crowded areas, often your primary link is going to fall down. And so it helps to have, say, LTE from Verizon and the option to plug in a modem or a Wi-Fi from T-Mobile or Sprint just to sort of spread out the risk if you're actually going to try to push out from the event.
I like this idea. I'm already seeing, in my head, I'm seeing like an iPhone with a little holder, and there's a LTE modem behind it just in case something fails.
Just in case.
We can really make this work. I'm going to figure out the audio thing. We're going to have something in our hands pretty soon. I think in a week or two, something like that.
So, that's about right.
So, yeah, if we're going to do some more brainstorming on the air, it's going to be lots of fun because you've got some information I haven't tried.
Yes.
But the other thing is, like, I'm going to keep making it more complex because I want this fast, and I want this to be simple, and I want to be able to do everything on one device. And things have changed so much. I'm going to tell you a story. Back when I was a writer, I wrote this post on the Apple blog. And was saying, I hope they bring GarageBand to the iPhone. I was derided for weeks by the commenters saying, well, you can't possibly have GarageBand on an iPhone. That's crazy. It'll never happen. It'll never happen.
I can already see how this is going to work.
Yeah.
I can see this because I'm going to want to keep adding stuff to it because I do carry a portable kit, but it's by no means it's a single device. I have two nice cameras and the broadcast rig and the editing station and all the mic. I'm going to want to put all this stuff in, and you're going to keep shrinking.
You got to be nimble when you're in these shows. In the shows, you're like, okay, well, I'm going to go over here. Okay, you got the cool product right there. Oh, I got it. It's got to be really, really light.
Cats.
And it's got to be secure. So we're going to build something that can do that. And if you guys have ideas, send us an email, knowhow@twit.tv. I'm sure, just like when we did the book scanner thing, Patrick and I did that, you guys had lots of different ideas. Send it to us, knowhow@twit.tv. If you got your ideas, maybe they'll be integrated into version 1, version 2, version 3. I don't know. We'll see.
And I know for a fact that we've got fans out there who have made some fantastic rigs. I met a few of you at CES. One guy actually had a rig that strapped. It was a backpack plus a belly pack, and
I've
it had
this guy.
The camera went over his head on this little boom, and he walked. So yeah, send us pictures, send us instructions.
He looked like somebody that would be in the movie Alien.
Yes,
he might as well just have a helmet with lights on it. It was quite impressive. We haven't even talked about the light requirement, just firing out at them. Anyway, let's go on to feedback. So we got an email from David, and he says, hey, know-how guys, I wanted to see if I could get mobile phone service without a traditional mobile phone plan. A man after my own heart here.
Yeah.
I figured you guys have done a show on this already, and sure enough, I was right. I watched the episode, and it answered all my questions except one. Can a Bluetooth headset be used with an iPod Touch or iPad Mini? This would solve the out loud issue you would have when it comes to using those devices. I've done some research, but I couldn't find a definitive answer. Any help would be greatly appreciated. Now, luckily, we had an answer. Found it at Apple. Now, I do have a Bluetooth headset, which I need to test. But as far as I know, it used to be in the old days of iPod Touches and the old days of iPhones, you couldn't really do this. But with new versions of iOS, you do have headset support for iPod Touch and iPad. It doesn't specifically say on the Apple website iPad Mini, but it doesn't actually exclude it either. It probably works because of FaceTime, Skype, those kinds of things. So I'm going to test that out, but I'm 99% sure, because Apple says you can, you can.
Yeah. Now, I know what he's trying to do. I feel the same way. I like to stick it to the telcos. You know, they've been just raking us over the coals for so many years that we want to find an alternative way to get our VoIP. However, I'm going to throw in some counterpunch to this, and that is there is a plan from a major telco right now that is kind of sticking it to the telco.
Yeah, which one is this one?
It's T-Mobile.
T-Mobile?
So they offer a $30 a month, and it's prepaid. So it's $30 flat. There's no extra fees.
Oh, you mean the one I have and that Snubs has?
And yeah, I think all of us have, right? Yeah. And the cool thing about it is there's only 100 minutes, but you can play with your phone, use Skype, use different VoIP clients, and in essence, you can turn that $30 plan into a full-featured $80 or $100 plan, and you don't have to do a whole lot of hacking.
That's true. And for about, I think it was, 3 years or so, I lived without a phone that way. Right. I had a modem and I had an iPod Touch. I actually lived like this. So, because I was like, why would I need a phone? I can just text everybody because that would work. Skype, I'm pretty sure I said this in that episode too. Skype is unforgiving.
Yes.
So if you're on like the Metro North train and you're using T-Mobile or Sprint little LTE device, if it dips a little, your audio is going to sound like garbage.
Absolutely.
So then you find out that there are different and better systems. Like FaceTime, I found, was really surprisingly robust. If you lost a packet, it didn't matter. Skype, you just sound like... And that doesn't really work. When you're trying to do a phone call, you know?
You know what? Here's what I can do. Here's what I can show you. I can actually show you how to build a system that puts a VoIP gateway back at your home connection. So you've got your cable. No. It's like a miniature Trix box. Yeah, so, okay. So asterisk. So that your phone will connect over the data connection back to your home phone line and access it that way. And actually, that's much better. It's more forgiving with the dips and the bumps in mobile bandwidth.
This we'll have to check out then.
This we'll have to check out. So, just for you.
You know what? I think that wraps up our first episode.
How about that?
Well, that's freaking fantastic. Mm. Yeah, so if you guys, you can always find all the notes we're going to have at twit.tv/KH. If you saw Padre's amazing graphics and you're like, wait, again, what was that? twit.tv/KH. You can download the episode. You can pause the episode. You can watch us again in glorious HD. If you don't want to see our shining happy faces, you can listen to the audio version only. Do what you want. We've got tons of show notes for all the old projects we've had on there. We've got a library of over 60 episodes as of this episode. Now, all kinds of information there. Where else can people find us?
Well, people can also find us on Twitter. So if they go to Twitter and use the hashtag, TwitKH. TwitKH. Use the hashtag TwitKH.
Come on, new guy.
I know. Come on, get in.
Get in the game.
Oh, and by the way, those graphics, I did that with Microsoft Paint. Yay. I'm helping. No, but find us with the hashtag TwitKH, and not only will you be able to suggest projects for future episodes, but you can talk about something that we did. If you think my explanations of VLANs was bunk, write us. If you want to know more about the IOSafe, write us. If you want to see me put an IOSafe through a car, write us.
Yeah, use the hashtag TwitKH and we'll find it.
Hashtag
That's very
disaster.
Important. And also, because it's on Twitter, it's very short. So
very
they
short.
Don't have to like yell at you very much.
Right.
But if you wanted to yell at us really in a long post in public, Google+. You can do that there. gplus.to/TwitKH. You can find our Google+ community. There's over, I think, 4,000 of you guys in there. The most frequent question is, what's on this week's episode? That will be answered. It's pretty much answered every week over there. But the best thing about this community, it reminds me of the old forum days.
I love it.
People
them.
Are asking
yes,
questions.
Yeah.
They're answering questions. I'm learning. I'm sure you'll be in there talking to people. We'll be yapping with you guys back. I always find it better than email because that way it's a public conversation. And this information is shared with everybody. So I really love that. Go to gplus.to/TwitKH. It's the fastest way to find it. Or you could do a search in Google+ for Twit Know How, which I know is fun because you get to type in all the letters.
I like typing.
You like typing?
Yeah, I do.
That's good.
It's a thing.
Now that you know how to do VLAN stuff and how to plan crazy things, go do it. Get out of here. Show's over.